You're listening to Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow, and for the rest of the hour, a new look at an age-old riddle of quantum mechanics, and that involves the nature of light. You've heard this question. It's a historical question. Is light a particle like a photon, or is it a wave? Well, why not both? You can have both as long as it isn't both at the same time. They don't happen at once. Can't have light being a particle and a wave at the same time. At least that's what Niels Bohr proposed. And whether you see light as a particle or as a wave depends on how you're looking at it. If you look for a wave, you see a wave. If you look for a particle, you get a particle. But you're never going to see both at the same time. And this he called the principle of complementarity. Einstein argued with Bohr. Impossible, he said. How can the truth of the nature of the universe change depending on how you measure it? Well, in a new experiment, a very controversial experiment, my next guest says he has upset that quantum apple cart. He has performed an experiment in which you can detect both the wave-like nature and the particle nature of light at the same time. Joining me now is Shahryar Afshar. He is visiting research professor in the Department of Physics and Astronomy at Rowan University in Glassboro, New Jersey. Thanks for joining us, Professor Afshar.
My pleasure, Ira.
Did I set that up right? Describe what you did right?
You pitched it perfectly. I think that is the exact, very concisely explained version of complementarity principle and the story surrounding my experiment.
Now, we have posted the experiment, and you did it. It's a cover story in this week's issue of New Scientist magazine. I posted it on our website at sciencefriday.com. You can see the experiment. And basically, let's describe it a bit, the experiment that you set up. And it's the classic slit experiment with light, correct? But with a little bit of a twist to it.
That's true. If you look, I don't know if your listeners can actually see the webpage. I can explain
First
figure for a second, yes. The first experiment, there are actually three experiments. The first experiment is the controlled version in which we set up the whole parameters for the experiment we need.
You have light entering. You have two sources of light, or one source of light, a laser light that enters two slits in the classical experiment, and the light goes through a lens and bounces off some photon detectors.
That's right. So basically, the first portion of it, the slit portion of it, is the double slit experiment, the famous Thomas Young experiment that shows the interference properties of light, and the second portion where you use the lens produces an image of the slits. Actually, I use pinholes, so I would use the pinholes from now on. And these images are there's a one-to-one relationship between these pinholes and the images, and therefore, when you see a photon in either of those images, you can inversely relate them to each of those pinholes.
Mm-hmm. So you have the photon detector detects a photon, and then you have on the other side you have the pinhole makes this diffraction pattern that's the classic diffraction pattern, and in the experiment you show that you can place a grating in the dark spot. The diffraction pattern alternates dark spots and light spots, and you can put a grating in the dark spots, which shows that the diffraction pattern is still there, and also you can detect the photons at the same time.
Well, actually, what's going on is twofold. The interference pattern is a sort of a zebra-like pattern of light, darkness alternating.
Right.
And that's the wave-like nature of light, which happens exactly before the lens.
Mm-hmm.
After the lens, the light is focused by the lens, and therefore you can tell which one of the two slits or the pinholes the light has come from. And that gives you the so-called which-way information.
Right.
The great debate between Einstein and Bohr surrounded around this issue, that if you had which-way information for the photons, you could not established that there is an interference pattern in the system, because your photons must have behaved like particles, and particles, of course, cannot interfere with each other.
Right.
Interference is a property of waves. And so the idea that I had in mind, I said, well, look, let's test this in the following way. If I have the images and I'm looking at these images, and these images tell me that the photons that end up in either of those images happen to come from either of those pinholes, therefore, I have the which-way information at the image plane.
Right.
Does that really mean that my photons did not interfere before the lens, where previously I could see the interference pattern readily? So, yes, I have placed a grating, but we have to be careful, because when the word grating is used, it has produced a lot of confusion in the minds of many readers of the article. they think that this is the typical grating. A typical grating usually has about 1,000 wires per millimeter, and that tremendously diffracts the light that is incident on it.
Right.
What I have used is essentially I've used six very thin wires. These are monofilament wires, and they're placed at positions of the dark fringes, that is, the regions that happen to be absolutely dark when there is interference pattern produced by the two slits.
Mm-hmm.
And so initially, the control experiment is, as you said, there's double slit, there's the lens, and there's the images that we see.
Right.
And so we get a flux measurement out of that for each of those images. In the second experiment, what we do is we place the grid of wires, which we have already placed exactly in the dark fringes of the interference pattern, so we know where the dark fringes are. We place those wires where the dark regions of the interference pattern is, close one of the pinholes, and look at what happens. What we see is that if light actually this is a simulation of what light would do if it behaved like a particle, because there is no interference now, because one of the slits is closed. Obviously, there is nothing to interfere with.
Right.
And, these wires have light incident on them. What they do, essentially, is they produce a shadow along with some diffraction. And so what you'd see at the detector that sees that particular pinhole is that you see a sort of degradation, deterioration in the resolution of the image, and you also see a reduction in the total amount of light that is received by that detector.
Mm.
And so we do the next step in a very simple way. We just open both the slits. We leave the wires where they were before in the dark fringe regions, and we see what happens to the images at this time. And what we observe is that, strikingly and surprisingly from the point of view of Copenhagen interpretation, you have a restored image. In other words, your images are still the same two nice, crisp images that you had before, and there is also no reduction in light, which implies that these wires were not actually producing a shadow. That is only possible if they had no light incident on them.
Right. So the interference pattern would be there, and also the detectors are detecting photons at the same time.
That's right.
And now, how do you explain your discrepancies with what Bohr and classical quantum mechanics says?
Well, the classical quantum mechanics is actually correct the way it calculates. I mean, you can use quantum mechanical formalism perfectly well to explain what happens in this experiment. You know, there are two wave functions that come out of the two slits. They interfere with each other in the region that they overlap. They go through the lens. There is something called the Fourier transform that acts on them and separates them in both, you know, separate ways. Which wave information is at the image plane, interference pattern is at the interference region. The problem is with the measurement. In fact, Bohr's ideas come not because of the formalism itself, but because of the problem of the so-called wave function collapse, or the measurement theory.
I know we're getting very complicated here, but I'm trying to boil this down into saying Bohr said you can't see the image and see the photon at the same time. You can't see the diffraction and the photon. You can't see the wave. You can't see the photon at the same time.
Right.
Your experiment says we can do both of those.
Right.
What is? Are you saying there's something about the photon or light itself that is different than we should be thinking about how it behaves?
Right. Well, I think the reason Bohr wanted to say that was because particles like BBs, like billiard balls, like raindrops, that the image that Einstein had about photons must only go through one of the pinholes. And waves can go through both pinholes. But the same thing cannot do both at the same time. And so, cleverly, Bohr came up with the idea of complementarity that you can't have both.
Right.
And however, in this experiment, you see both of them taking place. What is the conclusion? Well, one conclusion, some of my colleagues say, and they belong to the famous calculate and shut up school of thought in quantum mechanics, and they say, well, this is the way it works. We don't actually have to explain it. There is no need to philosophize or use human logic. We're just not capable of understanding what's going on. Another approach would be, well, actually, let's be honest about what we have here. Wave mechanics can explain the entire thing, but the moment of detection.
Let me just interrupt and remind everybody that I'm Ira Flatow, and this is Talk of the Nation, Science Friday from NPR News. And because we're running out of time, I know it'll take a lot of explanation here.
Yes.
Are you saying then that and you said wave mechanics can explain everything that's going on here? You're saying that, in fact, that the photon is just a wave and not a particle at all?
Well, that is the indication from this experiment. Yes, there is.
That's why there's no contradiction. It never is a particle. It's always a wave.
Well, the wonderful thing about waves is that they can do both. They can produce interference pattern, and they can give you which-way information. The detection part is that we see the photons as particles, and people have explained this in the following way. They say light is, in fact, a wave, but the detectors are made out of particles, and these particles are quantized, in a sense, as quantum mechanics tells us. But the quantization is not in the field, is not in the light itself. It's in the particles of the detector itself. That's why we see these little clicks.
Well, that's what people were criticizing, saying, you know, if you don't have particles, if you say that the photon is really just a wave, how does a particle detector detect it? And you're saying it's possible to do that.
Oh, it's absolutely possible. There have been many papers on this. Willis Lamb, in fact, did a wonderful work on this, the Nobel laureate, that explained this. And there is a huge community of stochastic quantum electrodynamic people that actually do this work.
Mm-hmm. Do you think if you're saying that the photon is actually a wave, would that mean there are other particles that we think of as particles in your thinking that should be really thought of as waves?
I think what we have to do is we have to extend this experiment and do analogous experiments in the electrons and other types of particles, elementary particles that we know, and see what the results are. My sense is that ultimately what we are going to see is that particles would be seen as sources of waves, and electromagnetic field would be seen as the wave itself.
Mm-hmm. And are you going to be doing those other experiments?
Well, we are planning some experiments. I'm happy to inform you that we actually did just yesterday finish the single photon experiment of this version of my experiment at Rouen University, and the results were positive. So we know that for single photon states, we still have the same results that we've obtained, and we are planning for some other experiments as well.
Are you going to be publishing this work in a peer-reviewed journal?
Yes. I think right now it's in peer review, and hopefully we'll hear from them in about a week or so, and then there are other works in the works. There are theoretical works on the theory of measurement and so forth.
You know, we're at a time where, you know, we don't know what all that dark energy is in the universe, and now you're telling us we don't know what all these particles are.
Well, it's a very exciting time in physics. It's very open, and I think the best thing for the youth in physics world is to get out there, question, and get involved in the debate. Don't accept everything, but at the same time, be very polite.
Do you think string theory, this new string theory, which is not provable, might be useful in explaining yours, or do you not need it?
Well, I don't think I need it. I'm sure they would, in some point, get into it, but at this point, I think it's superfluous.
Mm-hmm. And I'll bet you're waiting for the reviews to come back, and because you're really upsetting a very well-known and accepted theory here.
Yes, I've already received tons of letters, congratulations as well as criticism. But most of it, I think, will boil away after people read the paper and understand the dynamics of what's going on and understand the scales of it.
Dr. Afshar, we're going to keep an eye on you on this one.
Thank you very much.
Because it's very interesting, the idea that it could be both a wave and a particle and detected at the same time is quite something new for 80 years so far.
Just about, that's right.
On. Thanks a lot, Dr. Shahryar Afshar is a visiting research professor in the Department of Physics and Astronomy at Rouen University in Glassboro, New Jersey. Thank you for joining us today.
My pleasure.
Kevin Wade is our technical director. Our audio engineers are Matt Galek and Paul Masiello and Rigo Cardi here in New York. We had help from Greg Smith, who composed our theme music, and from NPR librarians Kim Oleski and Alphonse Vinn. If you have comments or questions, you can write to us at Science Friday, 55 West 45th Street, 4th floor, New York, New York, 10036. Also, you can surf over to our website at sciencefriday.com, where you can find back editions of Science Friday. And also, Science Friday's Kids Connection is there. It's on hiatus a little bit for the summertime, but we still have all the teaching materials. If you want to get ready for the coming school year, and what school starts in about a month, you can look at our editions of Science Friday Kids Connection and get ready teaching curriculum for your classrooms. Have a great weekend. We'll see you next week. I'm Ira Flatow in New York. Thank you.